Addressing Maine's teacher shortage, what needs to be done? It is a nationwide problem, but knowing that doesn't make it any easier for the school districts in Maine struggling to find qualified teachers. And the problem shows no signs of improving. There are more people leaving the teaching profession than there are coming into it. Certain subject areas, world language, special ed, science, to name a few, are facing even more severe shortages. But school leaders say they need more qualified teachers across the board. There have been some creative ideas to expand Maine's teaching pool, including one before the legislature right now, which would relax certification standards for professionals with work experience in a field. But many people believe that solution wouldn't serve students. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, what needs to happen to attract and retain more qualified teachers throughout the state? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is a problem across the country, not enough teachers to cover the need in K through 12 classrooms. Here in Maine, the shortage is felt in science classes, special ed, world languages, and many other subjects, and at all grade levels. Today, we're going to discuss why there aren't enough teachers to go around and what can and is being done to bridge the gap. Joining me in the studio, Catherine Biddle, Assistant Professor of Educational Leadership at the University of Maine College of Education and Human Development. Barbara Sloat is a grade 7 language arts teacher at Westbrook Middle School, and Lois Kilby Chesley is president of the Maine Education Association. And a note, the MEA represents many of the employees at Maine Public. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you seen evidence of the teacher shortage in Maine? Do you think the teaching profession is respected and valued today? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to you all. Lois, I'm going to start with you. Can you quantify this somehow? How bad is it? How short are we of teachers?
So it depends a lot on the area, and not just the content area, but also the area of the state, because certainly the rural parts of the state are at a disadvantage for some of the teachers going there. I think when we talk about special ed, which you mentioned, and science and mathematics, those are the ones we think of first, but there are many other areas in the rural towns that are open. And we can look around and go on the websites and see where there are still openings. So it's pretty significant around the state.
What are the schools who don't have the teachers they need? What are they doing?
Well, there are a few different things that different schools have done. One is to bring in long-term substitutes, and that can sometimes be okay if the person has a background in it, and not so great if the person doesn't have a background in whatever it is that they're being asked to teach as a long-term sub. Another thing is one of the things that came up a few years ago, particularly for foreign languages, is they went to using online foreign language programs for teaching. So the sorts of things that you can pick up for sale in the airport, you can also purchase online, and that's how kids were getting their foreign language training.
Mm. Kat, what are some of the reasons we have a shortage?
Well, I think that that when we think about the kind of national picture around teacher shortages, you see many fewer people choosing to enroll in teacher preparation programs. You know, over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen maybe 240,000 fewer people going into teacher education. So that's one of the reasons. I think, historically speaking, we've always struggled to staff rural and small schools in this country. You know, when we look back over the last 100 years, you see people in 1910, 1920, 1930 lamenting, you know, not being able to get teachers to go out to rural areas. So this isn't necessarily a new problem in that sense.
Okay. So not enough going into it, not enough, I want to say young people, but anybody taking teacher education programs. Are there any other reasons?
Well, I think also one of the contributing factors is that you do see young teachers especially leaving the profession fairly early, and that can be for a variety of reasons. Often, I mean, some of the biggest contributing factors are, you know, teacher burnout, you know, feeling that they can't reach the students that they want to reach with the resources and the training that they have. So that is an area that needs to be addressed.
All right. Well, Barbara, turning to you, because you're interesting for a bunch of reasons, I'm sure, but one of them is you didn't start out. You didn't go to college with the intention of becoming a teacher, but are a teacher now. Tell us your story.
So I actually went to college with the intention of not being a teacher. My sister's teacher, my brother's teacher, my mother was a teacher, and I thought, man, I do not have the patience to teach, to be with young kids. It seemed overwhelming, and I actually went to college, and then I went to law school. I practiced law for 9 years in Maine and quickly realized that it wasn't my passion. It just wasn't something that could sustain me for a career. And you start thinking, well, what should I do? The joke I always tell, you know, it's funny or not, is, you know, as a lawyer, it was incredibly stressful, but it was a lot of, to put it politely, it was boring sometimes. And I traded out the boring part. Now I just kept the stress as a teacher. So that's the way I went. I thought about it for years, whether I could do it, whether I could afford to do it, whether my family could handle it, because the hours are pretty overwhelming too.
That the hours are overwhelming compared to being a lawyer.
Yeah. I mean, I get to work much earlier and I stay through the day. I go pick up my son and I parent, and then I go back to work. I grade at night after I put my son to bed. So it is a full day job. It's not, you know, you hear the cliche that teachers, oh, they teach 9 to 3, no big deal. But I get to work at 7:30 and I leave work at 5, and then I start grading again probably 8:30, 9 o'clock at night.
And what grade do you teach?
7th.
And would you encourage somebody to do what, follow your footsteps and do what you've done?
If it's what they love. The challenge with any professional program, with any licensing program, is you can't test drive it. You can't go in and say, I wonder if this would work. It's the same challenge in lawyering. You could go be a paralegal, you could go be an ed tech, but it's a different job. So you can't go spend a day in the shoes and say if this is right or not. And I think that's where the teacher prep programs really could do a good service to their students, helping students understand what the teaching career actually is.
Mm. Go ahead, Lois.
So I think what Barbara just said is a part of what is playing into our openings now in education, and that is we're telling the truth about what education life is like, and the hours are hard. There are lots of things that we're told we're going to do that are mandated by the state or by the federal government. Kids over the years have changed. We know that the way that they're motivated is different. And I think we've done education a service by being honest about it, so that we aren't bringing a lot of people in who want to become educators for the wrong reasons. But we've also done ourselves a disservice, because what we're doing is we're telling those stories and discouraging people from entering education. So I will tell you that I have one of my sons who said he might consider going into education, and I discouraged him at the time from going in. So I don't know about Barbara's family who were educators, yeah, but I don't know if they said, you know what, you might not want to do that.
Oh, it's interesting.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
My sister, who's a bit older than me, not a lot older, she's been teaching 25 years. She started right out of college. And when I said I'm going back to school to teach, she basically said, are you crazy? Maybe I am, but it was what I wanted to do. So I think there are more seasoned professionals who are hesitating to recommend it as a career.
Mm. Barbara, it's interesting to me when I asked you what's wrong and why people either aren't going into teaching or getting out to teaching, there are two answers you didn't give me, which were interesting. You didn't say pay, and you didn't say all this high stakes testing. Are those really secondary?
I think it depends on the professional. And I'm fortunate that I was a lawyer. So in order to go back to school, I spent a lot of my time as a lawyer saving money, because I took a year out of working where I was still paying for daycare and still paying for the household expenses based on the savings I had as a lawyer. For somebody who didn't have that resource, I think it would be a huge challenge to switch careers. I was paying for grad school and paying for my daily life. The pay is not good. I took a significant pay cut to teach. Not only that, in Maine, just because of the way our law is set up, I'm going to take a huge hit to Social Security when I retire. I have years and years of savings from my last profession, but there's a clawback in the federal law. And as a lawyer, I wrote to my senators and representatives saying, look, you're discouraging people from teaching. So yeah, money is a concern, but luckily I have a husband who has a flexible job who can help with the daycare in the morning, and we've worked around that. As far as high-stakes testing, I'm fortunate to work in a school that uses testing to guide instruction as opposed to testing to hire and fire. So it depends on the school. It depends on the professional, I think.
And Kat, what about the students you have at the University of Maine? Are these impediments to them?
Well, I think that anecdotally, I've certainly heard people lament the change in what the day-to-day life of being a teacher is like in the era of high-stakes testing. I do agree with Barbara that I think a lot comes down to the leadership in the building. You know, the kind of culture that a principal is able to create around accountability has a lot to do with the kind of professional culture that exists within the building and the kind of job satisfaction that teachers will have within that building within the context of the resources that they have. I think testing can be used to improve instruction. I also think it can be the block, you know, the measure against which teachers are held in a way that's very punitive. And I think that that can lead to low morale, which again, in turn, can lead to teacher burnout or feeling dissatisfied with the profession and ultimately leaving. So I think certainly lots of research has shown that the leadership in the building makes a huge difference in terms of teacher retention and creating a positive culture where teachers can collaborate, where they can feel creative, where they feel like they can really express themselves and teach in a way that fits their students' needs, but also fits their own personality and feels satisfying to them.
And Barbara, you mentioned that the leadership in a school is really important. But Lois, I wanted to say to you, isn't that another layer of the issue, that there are fewer people who are willing to want to be an assistant principal or principal?
Certainly. And superintendents. We're going to include superintendents in there, too. So, yes, we have openings at all levels. It's not just classroom teachers. Now, I'm just going to mention there is a bill that's going to be coming up that I just saw this week that proposes not allowing people to come back into the classroom after retirement. So one of the ways the rural areas have been able to make up the openings is to bring back veteran educators, veteran superintendents, principals, and classroom teachers. Just saw a bill this week that would not allow that anymore.
What's the logic behind that?
I believe it has to do with what we have heard referred to by some people as double dipping, that once you retire, you get your retirement, and then you can go back to the classroom for 5 more years and work either in the classroom or as an administrator. And there are just some people who think that's the wrong thing to do. But it's certainly a way to keep the open positions filled with people who do have a background in education, who have experience, is to bring back the veterans.
All right. Well, we've heard Barbara's story about why you changed from being an attorney to being a teacher. But I want to ask you, Kat, about the young people that you see at the University of Maine. What are their reasons for wanting to teach? And what can we learn from those who are bucking the trend and going into teaching? What can we learn from them to help more young people want to go into teaching?
Well, I'll start by saying that primarily as a faculty member in educational leadership, I work with principals and aspiring leaders. So I can certainly speak to the reasons that mid-career teachers want to take on more leadership in their building and often mentor young people who come in, new teachers who come in. I think that often when people come to a place in their career where they see an opportunity for change, they see something that is creative that they want to do, they jump at the opportunity to take on more leadership. I think one of the things that my students often lament is the fact that there's not enough mentorship for young teachers in the building, so it can be really difficult for new teachers who are coming in to get the kinds of supports that they need from veteran teachers. And in part, when we think about the fact that so many of the schools in Maine are small rural schools, that's because teachers have played so many different roles within those school contexts. You know, they're running the extracurricular clubs, and they're running the before and after school programs, and they're teaching multiple subjects, and they're teaching lots of students. So, you know, there's very little time left over to mentor young people. I think I don't really feel comfortable talking about, you know, what the students in the pre-service preparation programs are thinking as they're coming in to teach. But certainly I think the students that I work with see opportunities in creating more pathways to mentor young people into the profession and retain them.
Well, let's talk about some solutions. Lois, there's something before the legislature right now that would make it easier for people who have maybe an undergraduate degree and experience in a field to move into teaching. Let's say you've been a scientist or an engineer, maybe not go through the same teacher certification process. Kind of sounds good, but you're not in favor of this. Explain why.
Right. We actually believe that it's very important for people who go into education to have education classes to help them learn what to expect and how to respond and what the boundaries are of a classroom teacher. So you're right. Right now there are certification rules that are up for change. And one of the things is to allow work experience to count toward coming into the classroom. There's a point at which that is a good thing. We use people with work experience in career and technical education in the vocational schools, what used to be called the vocational schools. We use people with experience to teach auto mechanics, to teach carpentry and those sorts of things. And we would want that because that's their content area. What we worry about is having someone who maybe was an insurance agent come in to teach chemistry, or someone who just thinks it might be kind of fun to be a teacher, to use their work experience. Honestly, I would not want my doctor to be someone who had not been trained in medicine, but who thought it would be sort of fun. And so we do have some concerns about the alternate pathways.
I mean, if I could piggyback on that, I was a trained attorney. I had a law degree. I went to a great undergraduate institution, and I knew I couldn't just walk into a classroom and teach. I could easily content-wise teach high school AP American History. I have a background in European cultural studies. I could teach AP European History. What I couldn't do is manage a classroom of 25 kids. There's so many courses in a teaching program that are not content specific, they're teaching specific. And so as a language arts teacher, I'm a great writer. I can be very not humble about that. But to teach writing is a different skill than to do writing. So I took reading classes. I took writing classes. I had internships, which were invaluable in getting to know how to be in a classroom, how to work with kids, that my professional degree and my volunteer work with kids before just wouldn't be a substitute for. I needed the education program to be a competent teacher.
Well, what would you all like to see? What would you like to see happen to attract more teachers in Maine?
I guess I would like to see our schools start talking earlier about education as a career. So years ago, we used to have Future Teachers of America. Now I believe that's got another name, but we don't talk early and encourage people early to become educators. We encourage them to become attorneys. We encourage them to look at other careers. And I think one of the things that we need to start doing is telling people and changing the stories that we've been saying, and telling people that education is an amazing career, that it can be fulfilling. Do you get rich? No. Should educators be paid more? Absolutely, from my perspective. But we have to be telling people that it's an incredible job to know that you work with the future of Maine or with the future of our country, of our world.
We do have to take a break. We'd love to hear your ideas on how to improve the situation, how to get more people into teaching in Maine. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Maine Health Cancer Care Network. World-class cancer care right here in the place that gives strength, home.
On the next Fresh Air, Melba Patillo Beals. She was one of 9 African-American kids who in 1957 participated in the hard-fought integration of Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. It was one of the early battles of the civil rights movement. She has a new memoir called I Will Not Fear. Join us.
Tonight at 7 o'clock, here on Maine Public Radio. We have have another Maine Calling On the Road live event coming up. This Wednesday, Jen Rooks and the Maine Calling team will be live at 1 o'clock in Lewiston at Bates College's Muskie Archives, and you're invited. The topic is purposeful work, and Bates College initiative that aligns student interest and talents with the skills and work they will pursue after graduation and fosters connections between Maine companies and potential employers. The event is free, but space is limited, so if you'd like to join us, please register by going to mainepublic.org and click on events. Thank you. Hope to see you there.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the teacher shortage in Maine. With me in the studio, Lois Kilby Chesley, who is president of the Maine Education Association, Barbara Sloat, seventh grade language arts teacher at Westbrook Middle School, and Kat Biddle, assistant professor of educational leadership at the University of Maine's College of Education and Human Development. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. So many questions coming in. I would like to start, let's see here, with Jean. She wrote, I have retired from teaching after more than 40 years in the classroom, most of them spent in Maine. I've seen teachers quit who came into teaching after other careers in the private sector after realizing they would lose most of the Social Security they paid in if they stayed long enough to collect a teacher's pension. Additionally, they would not be able to collect their husband or wife's Social Security if they were widowed in collecting a teacher's pension. Can your guest comment on the windfall elimination provision that Maine teachers are forced to contend with? I believe it has a chilling effect on working as a teacher in the state. You cannot live on a teacher's retirement pension in 2017. Barbara, this is what you were referring to before. Yep. Is there any movement to, in every time we do a program on teaching, this comes up. Lois, is there any movement to change it?
So in the past, yes, there has been movement to change it. It's gone to committee a few times. We got very close under President Obama to getting it changed, but it's not looking like it's anything's going to happen to it right now. It's definitely a problem. Unfortunately, what happens is people enter education not realizing, coming from another career, that they're going to be impacted by what are called GPOWEP, the windfall elimination provision, which is what Jean was referring to. Yes, it impacts both your own retirement because you can't collect the Social Security that you've put in, and also if your spouse were to pass away, you can't collect that. So it needs to be changed, but it is locked up in Washington.
So is what many people end up doing is foregoing, if they do change careers midlife, foregoing a teacher's pension so that they can hold on to their Social Security?
Correct. If you have your quarters in Social Security, which is required in order to collect that, if you've got that from before or after your teaching career, it is better to forego the pension, the teacher's pension, through the Maine pension.
And you're nodding, Barbara.
Yeah, I know. I've looked into this a lot because I do have years paid in, and I've actually, the last I heard was an email from Senator King, a form letter saying, you know, I've introduced a bill in committee. This was, I think, the summer of 2016. And so it's something our legislators are aware of, but I haven't seen anything. My own thought was, I'm so many years from retirement that who knows what Social Security will look like when I get to that point, but it's definitely a concern in the back of my head.
We'll go to Susan calling from Brunswick. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Oh, hi. I really appreciate this discussion. And I also wanted to add that I think there's another reason that that schools have been using online or software programs as a substitute for a foreign language teacher. And I'm pretty aware of it through my friends who teach foreign languages, that schools have eliminated those positions in their budget cuts and thought, oh, we can do this with, you know, Rosetta Stone or whatever. And I really think that that is a dangerous assumption. It's important to receive the cultural instruction along with, you know, speaking and writing and listening to a foreign language. And underneath it all, I think we need to question how much we value being able to communicate in multiple languages. I think this is a societal concern right now.
Thank you, Susan.
Right. So I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Susan. When we look at budgeting, one of the things that some districts have looked at is eliminating the foreign language teacher or teachers. And the harm that's done by doing that to the whole global picture of what we're trying to prepare kids for in the future is just irreparable.
Susan, thanks for your call. Going to a Facebook post from Rachel. As a teacher of 5 years, I'll tell you the reasons I'm thinking about leaving the profession. Low pay and lack of pay growth, unrealistic expectations of academic growth, lack of support for severe and sometimes dangerous student behavior. Kat?
I think this is, when I talk to teachers, this is one of the things that they tell me the most often, that they feel that they are not as supported as they could be and that student needs are too great to meet within the context of their training. And so I think one of the things that it's important for us to look at as a state is, are we resourcing schools with the positions and the training that teachers need to meet students where they are? Lots of students come to school with experiences that teachers either don't understand or how to support or basic needs that can't be met within the context of the resources at the school. So one of the things that I've been working on with a number of different organizations is how can schools expand their ability to meet students' basic needs? And I think if this can happen, then teachers will feel more supported. They may feel like they are able to get the training, that students come to school ready to learn. Because when people feel that they're disempowered to do the thing that they want to do, which is get to school and teach kids, really takes a hit on morale.
Barbara, I'm interested in your perspective on this because that's something that comes up over and over and over in reporting over the years is how much is expected of the schools, not only to teach a child, but to, you know, in some cases provide basic health care, in some cases help diagnose complicated behavioral problems, feed them. Do you find that you are having to balance teaching your students with many other things?
Oh, absolutely. I work in a high-poverty district. I think we're 58% free and reduced lunch, something like that. And over the course of the day, I'm teaching language arts, but I'm helping kids get glasses. I'm making sure in Maine that my students have winter coats, and I'm working with guidance counselors and social workers. I'm working with parents. We have community volunteers, but it's a lot of moving parts. I'm on a team of 95 students. I think 20% are not native English speakers, so it's navigating that, trying to communicate with their parents when their parents don't speak English. It's a lot of pieces to work with all the time. And it's not just physical needs and filling out a report for a child's possibly getting diagnosed with something. We have children with severe mental health challenges that personally, you know, I do the best that I can, but I'm not a trained mental health professional. I'm a trained lawyer and I'm a trained teacher. So helping these students in a regular classroom when they might well be in crisis is incredibly challenging.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Newmarket, New Hampshire, and Carrie. Hi, Carrie. Go ahead.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number...
Oh, and Carrie, if you could turn down your radio, that'd be great.
Hello. Did you just call me?
Yes, yes. Go ahead, but please turn down your radio. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I did that.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Carrie. I live in Newmarket, New Hampshire, and I graduated with a degree in chemical engineering, but then spent 10 years playing music, and I got tired of it. I was substitute teaching around Boston, and I found a job at Exeter High School in New Hampshire, and they were willing to hire me as a non-certified teacher basis on the content knowledge. In other words, they didn't want someone that just had a couple of college courses teaching. And then I was certifiable after a semester. It was called Option 4 in the New Hampshire system. I wondered if Maine had a similar system to that. And then my other comment was that once I was teaching, I found that a lot of teachers that had gone through a program really didn't have the aptitude for it, and other teachers bloomed. and blossomed once they were in the classroom. And now that I've spent 10 years at University of New Hampshire, I was thinking it'd be nice to get graduate students interested in teaching, particularly in STEM, where I am. So there you go. There's some ideas.
So, Carrie, to answer your question about Maine, option four in New Hampshire is similar to what Maine is actually suggesting right now, and that is using the work experience. And I wasn't sure where you were going when you said you had been a chemical engineer and then you'd been a musician and then you'd been hired as a teacher. I wasn't sure whether you were going to say as a science teacher or as a musician, but I believe what I just heard you say is that you've gone on to use your chemical engineering degree and you were hired in STEM.
Carrie, did you receive any instruction on teaching? Did you have to take any classes on teaching?
Well, I eventually did take there were three courses that generally in classes, the history of education, psychology of education, and the methods course. But frankly, I never used any of that. It was basically getting in the classroom with the students and confronting the students and seeing what they needed to learn and addressing it. And I think some people have a natural aptitude, and we need to find those people and somehow nurture them, whether or not they've gone through a formal teaching program, because a lot of people don't know when they go to college anything about education, about the joy and pleasure of nurturing young minds, you know. And somehow we have to present that to people so that they see it, you know, as a career, a stimulating, interesting career rather than just a way to make money. I mean, I know the money is an issue, but teaching is such a wonderful profession. All the people I know love to teach regardless.
I think what I'm hearing from Carrie, in the program he took to get his alternate certification, the one piece that really seems like it's missing is the internship piece. And when I think back to, I did a 9-month certification program, the most critical courses I took were internships. So I was in the classroom for months with a seasoned professional. My first internship had, I think she had 40 years experience in the classroom and was still innovating every day. And to me, that was worth all of the courses I took. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, history of education sounds very interesting, but I agree that's not the course I would pick as a mandate for an alternate certification. I would pick an internship type program where people are actually getting in the classroom before they're licensed to teach.
Carrie, thanks for your call. And that is a question I wanted to ask, that I know that there are alternative certification programs, including famously ETEP at mm-hmm. the University of Southern Maine. Is that what you did?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to give people who are listening to this program a sense of what it might take, it's a 9-month program?
Yep. It's a 9-month full-time program. You're taking graduate level courses in education and also interning throughout the program. So I think we had classes 3 or 4 days a week, and I was in a 7th grade classroom actually 5 days a week. And then in the spring, I interned in an elementary classroom 5 days a week also.
Go ahead.
So the internship piece of it is incredibly important, and that's why we're so glad to see that so many of the universities have started doing their internships earlier, their pre-service, get into the classroom, learn what it's like, because there's been nothing worse in the history of education than having people graduate from education, coming out of student teaching and looking back at their student teaching experience and saying, I hated it. So we need to start giving people the picture before that they get to the end of their degree.
We'll go to Flynn, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, Flynn. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. And hello, Barbara. And
hi, Flynn.
Hi, Flynn.
Hi. I wanted to add to the conversation about policies that address teacher shortages. Research-based policies that have demonstrated to make a difference are student loan forgiveness. Teacher certification programs are expensive, and it's a big barrier for some candidates. So if we can legislate more policies that do provide both federal and state student loan forgiveness, as well as residency programs, so that teachers have a mediated entry with sometimes a part-time that provides a paid internship while they're doing their teacher certification. And we have been able to do that with ETEP at University of Southern Maine, and have I've had about a third of my students the last few years in some sort of paid internship. Those help a lot.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree that both of those opportunities are incredibly effective when it comes to addressing teacher shortage. I think one thing to think about is the fact that there are no silver bullet solutions to this issue. I mean, there are many policies that can help, but often the thing that helps the most is localized partnerships between districts, between institutions of higher education. While policy environments, I think, can help, like loan forgiveness, for example, can be incredibly helpful because that's a resource that districts can draw on to recruit people. Often the other types of things that help are targeted incentives. So particularly when we're talking about rural and small schools, the ability to offer housing, transportation stipends, other types of assistance, or, you know, focusing on growing your own teachers. You know, when we think about shortages in special education, for example, the ability to subsidize education for paraprofessionals to become teachers is one solution that's been shown to be pretty effective.
Oh, it's interesting what you said about housing. It makes me think of 100 years ago when a small town would put up a teacher so they could have a teacher for the one-room schoolhouse.
Well, that's the thing that's so interesting about these issues is that when you think of the solutions, they've been tried over and over and over and over again over the last 100 years. And we haven't come up with one simple solution that's going to fix this problem. But often in the regional level, you can find things.
All right. So 40 years ago, I started teaching in Colorado, and they did give us housing, $25 a month for a duplex. So, but it helped because we were out of college and did have debt, and it was a huge help.
Flynn, thanks so much for your call. We do have to take another quick break, but before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. We are going to discuss the impact of Twitter on politics and social movements. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, which would be appropriate for tomorrow's show, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do CEI, helping grow good jobs and sustainable enterprises with financing and business advising services. CEIMaine.org. And New England Cancer Specialists, committed to leading the way to better outcomes for 50 years. More at NewEnglandCancerSpecialists.org.
On the next Speaking in Maine, we visit the Midcoast Forum on Foreign Relations.
The human rights debate is pretty much off the table. However, if it's peacekeeping, why not together?
Stephen Harder is a professor of law at New York University in Shanghai. He talks about the cooperation and competition between two major world powers, the United States and China. You can hear this discussion on Speaking in Maine, Monday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
For a long time, social media outlets have been wary of taking responsibility for the content posted on their sites. Is it time to change that?
We need to say, look, we want you to do more monitoring, and we don't want you to be the editors of which voices are okay or not, but we want you to have more transparency about which voices are speaking and more active about deception.
That and more for the future of big tech this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
From 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what to do about the teacher shortage in Maine. Joining me today, Barbara Sloat, language arts teacher at Westbrook Middle School, Kat Biddle with the University of Maine's College of Education and Human Development, and Lois Kilby Chesley with the Maine Education Association. Join our conversation 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to a tweet from Megan. She writes, I'm currently trying to be certifiable, but I'm finding it so hard to jump through all the right hoops. Classes not counting, 10-week minimum wait time for questions. An option 4 would be awesome, as I'm working now on waiver because the district was desperate. Is there an in-between? Is there something between what the legislature's proposing and something that is still practical, a practical middle ground?
So one of the things that is also being proposed is there wouldn't be waiver anymore. It would just be a conditional certification, and it would be 3 years. So you'd have 3 years to get what you needed. So right now, Maine has all different levels of you can teach for a year, but you've got to take certain classes. What's being proposed is 3 years to complete a conditional, and then you get your professional certification.
So a school district that really needs a certain teacher could hire that person and maybe in the summertime take the classes or...
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, get to Orono or to USM or someplace and get those courses taken, right?
We'll go to Mohammed, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Mohammed, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to ask a question about really how do you make the teaching, the profession better? Because from what I've heard so far, I've heard of ways of easing the barriers to entry to the position. However, how can you make it, you know, things like more affordable for people to be a part of that profession and to just make it a profession that younger people like me who would have loved to be a teacher just couldn't enter into that field because they were too scared because they have rent to pay and the Portland rent to pay and they're too scared to head into that field.
So Mohammed, you would have become a teacher if the pay were higher.
100%. I was inspired by a lot of the teachers in the city of Portland all throughout my youth, and it would have been a profession I would have heavily considered.
Okay.
But every kid knows, especially when you go to public schools, that it's just not a job that you could really live
okay,
on.
Okay, we're having a hard time hearing you, but I want to let our panel respond. Lois.
So, Mohammed, I it sounds like maybe you're in college or have graduated from college, and I'm sure that most people who have gone through have come out with a lot of debt. Up to probably $100,000, $120,000. In Maine, it's very common to hear people who have gone into education who have $60,000 or $70,000 in debt. Our minimum teacher salary in Maine right now is $30,000. So assume that someone comes out with $70,000 in debt. Even if they can work down their debt by working in some of the high-poverty schools, it still takes 10 years to do that. And in the meantime, they're working for $30,000 or $32,000 a year. Unfortunately, it's something we dance around, but we've got to start saying out loud that educators need to be paid at the beginning of their career a living wage. And one of the things that the MEA has been doing is talking about trying to get $40,000 as our base pay for beginning teachers. We've had a lot of support from some of the legislators. It's come up a few times. Senator Millett from Cape Elizabeth has been very helpful in that. But Mohammed, I hear what you're saying. It when you're trying to pay Portland rent and live off $30,000 and perhaps have a family and try to do child care, as Barbara was talking about, it all adds up and it makes it impossible.
Yeah, I would say I have friends in my school who work additional jobs outside. Some of them are realtors part-time. I have a friend who works at, I think it's a golf club where he bartends, and he'll make more in a weekend than he'll make in a month teaching. And he loves to teach. He wouldn't give it up for anything, but it's a challenge to make ends meet for a lot of families.
Mohammed, thank you for your call. We'll move to Amanda, who's calling from Augusta. Hi, Amanda. Go ahead.
Hi. I graduated from the University of Maine in Orono in 2006 with my degree in teaching, and I elementary education. I had great luck. I taught 2 years right out of the bat, and then my contract didn't get renewed, and I have not been able to get a teaching job or teach since. So I went into the field of social work, and now I do more like helping the kids, helping youth that, you know, are the kids that show up in the classrooms that don't have proper clothing and don't have that type of stuff that's necessary. But now I'm ready, you know, I'm thinking about a career change and going back to the classroom. Well, I never renewed my teaching certification after I got the 2-year license. And now I have no idea what to do or if I have to take more classes or what I need to do to get my certification back, I guess.
Okay, so let's ask that question. If one's certification has lapsed, what do you need to do to get it back?
So there's a certification department at the Department of Education in Augusta. You need to give them a call, set up an appointment, and try to get yourself into the office in Augusta and sit down and talk to one of their people there because they're very helpful. You might have to wait a little while to get in there, but they're very helpful once you get there.
All right. Good luck, Amanda. We're going to go to Bridgeton and Hillary. Hi, Hillary. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, hi. I have been here for about 6 months in Maine, moved from the Midwest, and had taught for 15 years in higher ed out there. And I kind of keep chuckling to myself when I hear about the teacher shortage, because I just don't feel, I've been substitute teaching in K-12 now in both New Hampshire and Maine, and I just don't feel that there's any great urgency anywhere that I've been. I've talked to two different superintendents. I've talked to a couple of principals. I've applied for a middle school social studies job, and it's just like, yeah, no, you know, thanks, because I'm not certified yet, of course. But I'm willing to go back and do whatever I need to and do option 5 and all that sort of thing. But it's just, it's frustrating because I do see that these students, you know, I love the students. I love this age group. But I don't, from my perspective, I don't feel there's an urgency in the state.
And why do you think that there is not this sense of urgency despite the numbers and the reality?
I don't know. It baffles me, frankly, because I mean, maybe, I'm not retired, but I'm in my 50s. You know, I don't know if that's it, if there's some ageism here, or if it's just, I really don't know. That's why I'm calling.
Okay. Thoughts?
I mean, just to jump in for a second, what I'm hearing is you're looking for a middle school social studies position. And I think it really depends on the subject area as much as anything. The 7 to 12 humanities teaching, there's no shortage. There are plenty of 7 to 12 language arts and English teachers and plenty of 7 to 12 social studies teachers. But in other areas, I think what I'm hearing, English as a second language, gifted and talented, technology, STEM classes, math, that's where the shortage is. So I can't speak to ageism. I hope that that's not it, because I think, you know, a seasoned grown-up is a great person to have in the classroom with middle schoolers especially. But it sounds potentially at least more the type of teaching you're looking for a job in.
Hillary, good luck to you. Let's see, we'll go to Maureen, who's calling from Brewer. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I was just calling to – I have two daughters. Both are teachers, but not in the
– Oh, shoot. We've lost Maureen. So we have Mary Payne, who's written in from the Maine Department of Education, and she writes, regarding the work experience pathway, which is already law, we should be excited by the proposed rule. It qualifies both the prior education and work experience of the teacher candidates and requires courses in education before a person can become a teacher. And once in the classroom, the same support and evaluation other teachers receive would apply to those who take the work experience pathway. The Maine Department of Education believes that given these qualifiers, we have the potential to attract people who possess highly valuable industry and academic expertise to work with and inspire our students and other teachers. This pathway does not replace traditional pathways. It's another way to attract talent to our schools. Certification rules can be confusing. I believe that once those who are skeptical understand the details of this proposed rule, they will recognize its potential and support the pathway enthusiastically. And that's Mary Payne, the Director of Strategic Initiatives from the Maine Department of Education. So that's the other perspective on this issue. Let's see. We're going to go to Susan. An email. I was a guidance counselor for 30 years. Despite the long hours and stress, I loved working with students, parents, and staff as a guidance counselor. What made me decide to retire was the direction the school system was going in proficiency-based learning and the way it was implemented. Seniors were coming to me and asking, in college, will I be able to retake exams? And I'd have to reply, no, you will not. I always have supported changes in education that improve our effectiveness in teaching children, but I could not look at students and parents with a clear conscience and say this system was in their best interest or would prepare them for work or college. Recently, I ran into one of the finest math teachers with whom I worked, and he left his school system for the same reasons. This is a teacher who would always go the extra mile to help a student learn. It makes me so sad. Many people are leaving the profession or doing so not because of their dedication to quality education, but because we are tired of what they were doing. This is the first time this has come up in this show, the whole move toward proficiency-based education. Barbara, how is this affecting teacher morale in your school?
So, I mean, it's tough to say as a newer teacher. I've only been in the profession for 2.5 years, so I'm new. And I came in under the PBL system. I feel like you could do a two-hour program on just this.
We've done a year-long one.
So, I mean, it's a challenge. It's a different style. It's different from how I grew up learning and talking to parents about it. I think there's just a fundamental misunderstanding of what it is. It's not infinite opportunity so much as we're trying to help the kids learn and figure out the pathways that help them learn and demonstrate the knowledge that they've achieved. And it's new and it's different, and there's theories and arguments for and against, so we could speak for days.
I think with any kind of policy change, there's always a transitionary period where things are messy and complicated. And again, it comes down to this question of, you know, building leadership and kind of navigating the different signals that come around a particular policy. I think with proficiency-based learning, we see incredible potential to have student-centered learning where kids are intrinsically motivated. But at the same time, I think there is this hit to morale that's happened around the actual transition in the day-to-day life of trying to make it work within the schools.
Okay, I want to ask you all, we've talked about how this is a nationwide problem. Is there any place out there that's kind of getting it right? That's any state, any city, any community that's figured out how to attract more teachers and sort of reverse this trend?
Right, I think about where I grew up, and I'm from the suburbs outside New York City, where there is not infinite money, but plenty of money. And so when we talk about teacher salaries in Maine, I mean, it just makes me smile thinking about in the 90s when I was in school, I had core classroom teachers earning in six figures. And the cost of living is obviously very different in southern New York, but there are places that choose to spend their money differently, and that has impacted education, to be sure.
And those places come to our state to recruit our education students, don't they, Kat? I know UMaine Farmington has a big fair every year with school districts far away from California.
I do think that, you know, obviously there are there's mobility in the teacher labor market, right? And that you've got people going where they can make more money. I think we do have a very attractive professional culture in Maine. When you look at our professional culture as compared to other states, we have a better teacher attractiveness index. In part, that's because we have smaller class sizes. Teachers typically have more autonomy. So that we do have some assets that we can capitalize on to address this.
And our quality of life, too. And it really can't be beat living in Maine. So that's a choice we can make.
Well, thank you all. Go ahead, Lois.
And I just was going to say, I think local control, having the schools maintain some local control is also something that makes Maine schools outstanding. We need to make sure that we maintain that.
All right. Well, thank you all three for being here. You just heard from Lois Kilby Chesley, president of the Maine Education Association. Kat Biddle is assistant professor of educational leadership at the University of Maine's College of Education and Human Development. And Barbara Sloat teaches seventh grade language arts at Westbrook Middle School. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Political Discourse in the Age of Twitter. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.